Gather round wizards, it's time to explore. A world full of magic, we're opening the door. With Dan and Jessica, we're here for the ride. On broomsticks and butterbeer, come along for the glide. Chapter by chapter, we're diving so deep through Hogwarts halls where the secrets creep. From the sorting hat to the wizarding fights, potions and spells and those magical nights. With our cups full of butterbeer, we analyze the lore, the friendships that blossom, the battles and more. Every word written we take with delight, bringing Harry's world back into the light. Broomsticks and butterbeer, let the magic flow. Join the discussion, there's so much to know. With Dan and Jessica, let your spirit fly. In the wizarding world, we'll always reply. From the Quidditch games to the dark magic's call, we'll take on each chapter, seeing how they enthrall. Hermione's wisdom, Ron's loyal fight, we'll discuss every twist, make the dark turn bright. With an open heart and a curious mind, we'll unlock the secrets that are waiting to find. So grab your broomstick and settle in tight. It's time for the journey we're starting tonight. Broomsticks and butterbeer, let the magic flow. Join the discussion, there's so much to know. With Dan and Jessica, let your spirit fly. In the wizarding world, we'll always reply.
Welcome back to another episode of Broomsticks and Butterbeer. I'm Dan Rhino.
I'm Jessica Rhino.
Episode 163. We are on to the final book in the Harry Potter saga, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. So we won't be recapping the last chapter because we'd have to recap the whole book.
Okay, let's do that.
So we're just going to go into the final book.
Oh, we're not going to do that. Okay.
Yeah, the final book. It's the final countdown.
I ran out of steam.
We're heading for Venus.
You made Robin cry.
Yeah. Robin doesn't like my singing. Oh. So chapter one of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. First of all, before we get into this, I've never read this book.
You've never read any of these books.
Yeah, but
that's kind of our thing.
As we're wrapping up here, a lot of people claim that Harry Potter and Deathly Hallows is their favorite book.
Who?
A lot of people. I've
had
lot of people tell me that.
Hmm.
Like, I can't wait till you get to Deathly Hallows. Can't wait till you get to Deathly Hallows. It's my favorite book.
Oh, okay.
So not your favorite book.
No.
You don't like this book? Should we not even
No, we have read to it? Finish. We've come this far. I'm not saying I don't like it. It's a different thing, though, because everything's just different.
It's a different thing. What's different about it? Everything's just different, okay?
Everything's just different. We don't follow the, like, go to school and then the school year structure.
Yeah.
Because school's kind of messed up right now.
So one thing I did notice about the first chapter in this book is, and it doesn't happen every book, but in several of the books in the saga, like, you don't even see or hear from Harry in the first chapter.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, and I don't know if that was done purposefully, on purpose.
On purpose, yeah. I was going to say, why don't we just go
nailed it.
On
first
purpose.
Try, I think. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate that.
You're good at words.
I am good. I do be doing words good sometimes.
Sometimes.
But I don't know if that was done on purpose by the author to specifically have like an intro chapter where the dude's name that's in the title of the book isn't even in there. It's like a little exposition setup.
Yeah, but I think we need it. You know, I mean, we did it on the last book, too. think. We had to follow Snape and the whole drama there. Yeah. So again,
Narcissa.
We're doing Snape again. But it just really... There was a couple of things that she just like snuck in there. And I was like, that was a great way to tell us what was going on without telling us what was going on. I liked this chapter. Like from a writing perspective. She did a good job.
Interesting. She who shall not be named?
Yes. she got something right. Once or twice.
Yeah, I just saw, I thought that was kind of interesting. Because this is probably the... I'm trying to remember. I should have gone back and looked at the first chapter of every book we've had. But it's happened several times where you kind of just get like a Voldemort setup. Because, I mean, I guess in a way... Your main hero's title, or name is in the title, but, you know, the main villain is just as important.
Yes.
To the story, since he was a baby.
I think it's a way to like, so, you know, people are going to read this chapter because they want to get to Harry Potter. Whereas if you started with Harry and then stopped and went back and did a Voldemort chapter, that's like breaking things up and people get annoyed and they're like, ugh, I don't want to read about this. I want to read about what's going on.
It's like
with
eating
Harry.
Your vegetables first and getting them out of the way.
Getting them out of the way.
So you can go to the steak.
Yeah.
And mashed potatoes.
Yes.
What is she
getting into?
Oh, there's a cupcake on the counter.
Oh.
And she's our dog.
She
is
thinks that that's for her, I guess.
A little peek behind the curtain. The Rhino
just
household.
Heard nails on wood and was like, "What is happening?"
So I've told you about the people that talk about like the Star Wars to Harry Potter comparison.
Yes.
So if we're comparing Harry Potter books to Star Wars, we kind of just finished our Empire Strikes Back portion of the story.
Okay.
And we're heading into Return of the Jedi. Like, the bad guys have won. Han is frozen in carbonite. Luke gets his arm cut off, his hand cut off. And the rebels are, like, in desperate need of a rally here.
Yes.
And that's kind of where we're at right now as we head into the final book. In the wizarding world, Dumbledore is dead at the hands of Snape. Voldemort is gaining more and more power and influence. Hogwarts is closing. It looks like our heroes are going to be on the run for the foreseeable future. And we've got a short chapter here. There's only 12 pages or something like that.
I think it was 10 in mine, but I'm reading the Ravenclaw edition, it's a little different.
Yeah, a short chapter to kick off book 7. And we always talk about our personal inner circle here on the podcast. But we really got to see Voldemort's inner circle in this chapter, as well as the interactions between them. And it starts with Corbin Yaxley and Severus Snape apparating to a specific location for the big meeting with Voldemort. Where are they heading, and where has Voldemort set up his base of operations?
So this is one of the lines that I thought was really well done. So we get a lot of description here about the hedges and the gate and creepiness and dark and how they get in. And then there's a noise, and it's a peacock, and he's just like, Lucien and his peacocks. And then we know where we're at. We're at Lucien's house. So I thought that was a very clever way to be like telling us letting us know where we're at without being like, and then they walked up to the home of Lucius Malfoy.
I heard you call him Lucien and Lucius. Is that like a little pet name you have for him?
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, I have a dog in my lap. I'm a little distracted. But we're keeping her from the cupcake now, so she's in my lap.
So we've got Voldemort setting up at Malfoy Manor. We've got all the Malfoys there, Mom, Dad, Draco, all at the table hosting Voldemort in their own home. But there's definitely some weird vibes that you get from the Malfoys in how they respond to having Voldemort in their home. So how would you describe how each of the Malfoys are acting here? What's their behavior like?
I like how you're going with weird. It's way beyond weird. They're completely uncomfortable. Almost like in shock. They're just like blindly staring at a wall. Unfocused. just kind of seems like they're pretending they're not there.
It's so weird because Lucius has... He's always so smug and superior and confident all the time, unless he's around Voldemort.
Yeah.
Then he just turns into a totally different person. Then he's not like the alpha in the room anymore. He's, you know, the dog who rolls over and shows his belly in submission.
I don't think he ever really was an alpha. He just thought he was. Mm-hmm.
But that's like half of being an alpha is thinking that you are one. You have to believe that you are one.
Before you made that comparison, I was like, he always came across as thinking like he was acting like he was the second in command. Like, oh, Voldemort's gone. I'm in charge now. I get to make decisions. All the Death Eaters should be following me. He just kind of gave off that vibe. But at the same time, he was never really like second in command. So I don't know where he got that power trip from.
Yeah, it's almost like he just wants to play big time, but not really be in the big time.
He just had, I feel like he just had more money than everybody else. And he was like, well, I can be in charge. I have money and the dark mark on my arm. So that makes me in charge.
And then you got his wife, Narcissa, who's just kind of keeping her head down the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, signaling Lucius by, like, squeezing his hand under the table.
Well, didn't they... He just got out of Azkaban.
Uh-huh.
So, because he was in trouble before.
Right.
And he was kind of gone. And so then Draco had to step up. And now she's got him back. And she really doesn't want him to mess up. And, you know, basically get himself killed for no reason.
And you've also got Draco, who we know was struggling with his role in Voldemort's inner circle at the end of the last book, who's seemingly still a little in shock following the events of the last book. You know, Draco had wand in hand. He knew his job was to kill Dumbledore. He couldn't do it. He got run out of there by Snape.
He essentially wasn't going to do it. We do note that Harry said he was lowering his wand. He wasn't going to do it. Then Snape comes in and takes matters into his own hands. So he essentially failed his big Death Eater initiation challenge.
And now he's got to sit in front of the Dark Lord, who's essentially taken over his house.
Yeah.
And Voldemort really seemingly like realizes that the Malfoys are having these varying levels of discomfort, because Voldemort's just messing with the Malfoys the entire chapter. And we'll get into that more specifically in a bit, but in their own home, they're kind of like getting bullied by each one individually with various comments or tasks that they're given.
I guess that's what you get for having the nicest, biggest house.
Uh-huh.
Everybody,
make yourself at home.
Yep, comes on over. This is going to be our new headquarters. It's nice here. I'm going to put my feet up.
So before we get to that part, what's going on above the table that all the bad guys are surrounded around?
I feel like that's another reason Draco is uncomfortable, because even though he didn't take her classes, this is a professor from his school, hovered above the table, at first unconscious and rotating.
Yeah, I was imagining like a like one of those ribbon dancers that like like hang from the rope and they're just like spinning around in circles.
Yeah. I think in this book, in this description, it says that they're upside down. So now I'm thinking like ankle up.
Yeah.
Their ankles up. But I think in the movie that she's laying flat and maybe rotating more like a you know, the rotisserie chicken.
Yeah, like a rotisserie chicken. Yeah, a tasty rotisserie $5 chicken from Costco.
Yeah.
Those are the best, by the way. Like, anytime you go to Costco, you got to grab a rotisserie chicken or two.
It has turned into, I'm not even going to Costco, but I'm driving past Costco, so I stop and get a chicken.
Yeah.
I don't want anything else. Don't need anything else. Just zip to the back, elbow an old lady, grab a chicken, and go to the front and check out.
God, Costco is just like, it's the worst. Like, trying to shop
there.
I know Jennifer loves it with all of her heart, but
Are the Costcos in California not as crazy as the ones here?
Yeah, they're insane here.
Because I went the other day and took Peggy, our neighbor, with us. And she had never been to a Costco. So I was like, you're in for a treat. You're in for an adventure. And she's like, well, the parking lot is crazy enough. Like, we had to fight for a spot. And I don't even bother parking close. I'm like, no. I just want a spot in, like, the second to last row. And I will walk. I'm not fighting anybody for a spot. But even now, because it's almost Christmas, the second to last row, you're still fighting for a spot.
Mm-hmm.
And we went in and... I think she wanted to look at stuff. She wanted to hit all the samples, and I'm just like,
"Get me out of this hellscape, like a football player plowing through everyone to get what I want
and get out."
And the carts are so big.
They are.
They're obnoxiously big.
And the little old lady doesn't care. She just runs you over with them.
Yeah. Or they'll park it like right in the middle of the aisle so that.
You can't get through.
Neither cart nor shopper can pass on either side.
I did. I was in line for the self checkout, and the line was really long. And Peggy was like, "Oh my god, this is the line." I was like, "Yeah, but it doesn't actually take that long." And so she ran off to go get more samples.
Of course.
And then I was checked out, and I couldn't find her. And she came back over, and she's like, "Oh, you're done already?" I'm like, "Yeah, I told you it doesn't take very long." But also, I had the guy. Came by because I only had like two things,
mm-hmm.
and he scanned them, and then all I had to do was scan my card. That's so nice.
Interesting.
That's the best.
Yeah, Costco shoppers have this like Lucius Malfoy air of superiority about them.
Lucy Lou?
Yeah, Lucy Lou Malfoy.
Lucy Lou Malfoy.
and they just kind of they'll just run into you, they'll stand right in the middle of the aisle, they'll block everything, they won't go down the aisle on the right side, they'll go right down the middle.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They think that, like, they feel like they're an upper class because they're a member.
A member.
They've paid for
gold member, elite member, business member, I don't know.
And really, you're just a horrible human being with an enormous cart.
So when I went with Peggy, I did get a cart because I figured she was gonna like.
You got an enormous cart.
Want something?
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I'm just gonna grab a cart just in case. I'm really all I'm going for is chicken, and like potatoes, and I think I got a bag of like freezer chicken. And so when you like go in where I parked, I'm on the opposite side of where all the carts are. But some people were just like abandoning carts there because they didn't want to walk across the chaos.
Couldn't possibly go through the trouble of returning their cart.
So I grabbed it and literally, like somebody was go. I heard a tiny voice behind me go, "I was gonna get that one." I was like, "I'm sorry, what?"
I told you that one time about the lady who just took my cart. Like I turned around to get something from the frozen section. And I turn around, this lady's walking off with my cart.
Did it have stuff in it?
No, it didn't have anything in it.
Oh, she thought it was free.
But why would a free cart just be in the middle of the store? Like, that far away from its home. Somebody obviously brought it there.
Babe, she didn't want to walk all the way to the front to get a cart.
And she took it, and she starts walking away, and then she looks back at me and notices that she took my cart. And tried to like interact with me. At this point, you're dead to me. Like, yeah. I want to have no interaction with you. I don't want to hear your apology. I will walk all the way up to the front with my handful of stuff and get another cart so that you can be comfortable. So that life can be easier for you. God, Costco's the worst, man. Good deals though on that chicken.
Chicken's really good.
It's like, I will never shop here again. It's like, oh, man, $5 rotisserie chicken. Oh, boy. So
they weren't having any food. They're all just sitting around a table in this chapter. Robin, don't. Oh, gosh. I thought she was going to push the buttons.
That's fine. If Robin wants to hit a couple buttons on the...
She was really close to this one.
I was completely boggled, wasn't I?
You know, if she wants to play around with the soundboard, that's fine.
Okay, I mean, she's being really good. She's just sitting here.
So this is Professor Burbage, right? Is that who it is? And I don't think we ever met her.
No, no, we don't really explore her.
She teaches Muggle studies, I think. And so she's apparently been kidnapped and tortured and, you know, hanging above the table like a trophy. And for the people that we've got gathered around, all the inner circle of Voldemort's baddies, there seems to be some differing of information that Snape and Yaxley are supplying Voldemort. Snape is saying that the Order of the Phoenix will be secretly moving Harry to an undisclosed location next Saturday, while Yaxley claims that he has learned that Harry will be moved on a different night. But Voldemort seems to have the most trust in Snape right now.
Yes. I had a little bit of trouble with this situation because one is like this Saturday night, which we don't know the date of. But, and the other one is presumably later in the month.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really know when. I mean, he says what date, but we don't know what the time difference is.
Yeah. He says, was it the day before Harry's birthday? Yeah.
So, but we don't know what day this coming Saturday is.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, just be prepared for both. Like, go this Saturday. If he doesn't get moved, then good news. It's the day before his birthday. Like,
Voldemort's
this isn't
just
that complicated.
Peeking behind a row of shrubs. Just like,
Is his schedule that full that he can't just be prepared for both
cases?
He's
got a lot of evil things that he needs to do.
He needs to learn to delegate.
He's booked up right now. He doesn't... And you telling him to delegate, that... He doesn't have that many people that...
There's a whole bunch of people sitting around this
table.
But
he has a bunch of followers, but he doesn't have a bunch of people that he thinks are competent enough to carry it out. And that kind of ties to my point about Snape. Snape is really like the right-hand man right now. And
that was kind of back to my point where Luce thought that he was, but
like, dude,
he never was.
Yeah, you never were.
It was always Snape.
Right.
And this proves it too.
But Voldemort kind of just brushes Yaxley off and just lets Snape finish what he's saying because Voldemort is totally... Voldemort paid his dues, man. He killed Dumbledore. And he, you know, got Draco out of there. And Snape really has a lot of credibility built up in Voldemort's eyes.
So... That was one of the things. Both Dumbledore and Snape have kind of... But Dumbledore and Voldemort have been like, I trust Snape. I trust Snape. He's my double agent. He's really on my side. He's faking the other one. But this kind of like sealed the deal. He killed Dumbledore. So now he is full on in. I don't think that Snape... Or just keep saying Snape. Voldemort ever like questioned it. Openly, because he wouldn't want to be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But now he's like, see, I told you guys the whole time.
Right. And Voldemort has Snape sitting closer to him. Voldemort cuts off Yaxley's speech and goes right back to speaking directly to Snape. And it seems like there's a couple of different reasons why Snape has risen to the level of trust with Voldemort. Mainly, of course, it's Snape's murder of Dumbledore. But I also think there's something about how Snape interacts with Voldemort that Voldemort actually has like some semblance of respect for. You know, Snape doesn't avert his gaze like everybody else does. He doesn't stammer or stutter. He doesn't lose his cool. And I think that kind of endears Snape to Voldemort more so than the others in the room.
Well, I kind of feel like a good comparison is like somebody who's famous. And they're meeting fans, and the fans are, oh my God. And then they meet somebody who just talks to them like a normal person.
Yeah.
Like, you want that normal interaction.
Uh-huh. Whatever normal is for being the Dark Lord or a celebrity.
Yes. And I think that's what you're saying. He likes talking to Snape. He likes that Snape, you know, kind of has like a normal conversation with him.
Mm-hmm.
Does he also like to terrify everybody? Yes, he does. But sometimes it's good to just have that normal conversation where somebody can look you in the eye.
We also learn that the bad guys have infiltrated the governing body of the wizarding world, that being the Ministry of Magic. And we mentioned Star Wars earlier and the parallels with the Harry Potter books, but this is a strategy that we saw in Star Wars as well, where you don't just take over the galaxy by brute force. Mm-hmm. You also have to have some level of like political maneuvering as well, not only for information, but also to have your chosen people of power in place to effectively carry out these evil plans that you, when you do complete your takeover. So we know that Voldemort is, you know, kidnapping people, killing people, terrorizing both the Muggle and wizarding communities, but is also getting pieces in place politically.
Mm-hmm. And not even like his followers, though. They're putting the people under a curse so that they'll do what they want.
Mm-hmm.
So that when they do make their move, there's like no resistance.
Right.
It just falls apart on the inside.
So let's talk about how Voldemort's treating the Malfoys, and then we can talk about why. Voldemort says he needs to borrow a wand from someone because he's before going to kill Harry.
Yes, he said he's learned things. He understands things now that he didn't understand before.
And this is because I'm guessing of the realization back in Goblet of Fire that Harry and Voldemort's wands share the same core. Mm-hmm. We learned that from Ollivander. And they can't properly harm each other. So Voldemort demands that Lucius give his wand up so Voldemort can finally put an end to Harry. So why Lucius? Why does Voldemort seem to have so much disdain toward Lucius and really the rest of the Malfoy family in this chapter?
I think part of it is the way we're behaving right now, that you don't really act like you're happy that I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's not a good follower.
Is it that, or is it, you know, Lucius getting caught years ago and then claiming he was with Voldemort against his will? Voldemort having to bust Lucius out of Azkaban again? Or maybe just Lucius doesn't have enough clean towels.
Yeah.
At Malfoy Manor.
Maybe not enough running hot water. Like,
yeah.
Maybe Voldemort tried to take a shower this morning and the hot water was gone.
Oh, yeah. Somebody used it all up. Yeah.
Yeah. Those Malfoys got hair that they have to primp and preen. And
so
I think it's a little bit of everything.
Yeah, Voldemort just kind of, he just over. And that. Over Lucius.
That attitude that he was kind of in charge, mm-hmm. while Voldemort was gone, mm-hmm. like I was talking about before. And he's really trying to hit home. To get him in his place. Like, you are not high up right now.
Mm-hmm. Like, not only are we going to come into your house and use it as our headquarters, but we're going to treat you like garbage. Yes. You and your family like garbage the whole time.
And then Bellatrix speaks up, and she is happy he's there. She's, you know, always kissing up. And he shoots her down, too.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was another little tidbit of good writing, where we get information without just somebody sitting down and writing out all the things we have been going on while we mm-hmm. while we were away. But we find out that Tonks and Lupin got married,
mm-hmm. which happened very quick.
Yeah, well, he fought it for a while.
No, we can't be together. All right, you know what.
Let's
get hitched.
And let's get married.
You know, when we talk about how Voldemort feels toward Lucius, there's also probably some degree of letdown in Voldemort's mind, given the fact that Draco couldn't go through with killing Dumbledore.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a negative mark against Draco. And there may even be some disappointment in the fact that Narcissa went behind Voldemort's back and made that unbreakable vow with Snape. Because you know Bellatrix told him about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that all of the Voldemort has a reason to have that disdain against all the Malfoys. And it's, you really see it with Lucius, but there's also, you know, some, you know, Draco catches some strays later in the chapter too, talking about babysitting. So I don't know. Another reason why Voldemort may have a little dislike for the Malfoy family is like what you just said, the fact that Tonks and Lupin got married. And we learned that Tonks, like Sirius, is one of the black sheep in the family tree back in the Order of the Phoenix book. So Tonks is Bellatrix and Narcissa's niece,
mm-hmm.
and Draco's cousin.
Yeah, so there's a third sister.
And she's brought a werewolf into the family.
Yeah, well, she also married a mudblood.
Like, why would Voldemort be so offended by this? I thought he loved werewolves.
Yeah, that's the other thing that annoyed me in this chapter. He doesn't... There's still that superiority that wizards are the best.
Yeah.
But I just was like, you need to rein it in just a little bit because you have werewolves, like, in your employ.
Yeah, he's, like, selectively racist.
Yes. When it suits him.
Right.
Werewolves can work for us and do our dirty work, but you can't. But they're not really people.
I mean, I'd love to have a werewolf in the family just for, like, the basketball tips.
A little Teen Wolf action.
like I would like to get better at basketball. I think having a werewolf in the family, as Teen Wolf has shown us,
yeah,
we'll do that. So then Voldemort makes a snarky comment to Draco about being a babysitter for the eventual Cubs.
Yeah.
And Draco looks at his dad like, hey, Pop, like, back me up here. Like, he's going after me. And Lucius just stares at the table.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a lot of dysfunction and drama at the Malfoy household right now.
And surprisingly, no trauma pizza.
Explain trauma pizza for... The thousands of people have no idea what we're talking about.
I don't even really remember. Something about Jennifer went to dinner with her family, and it was a very dysfunctional dinner, and she just sat there and enjoyed her trauma pizza, because that's what they're having for dinner.
Okay.
It was pizza and trauma that turned into trauma pizza.
There you go.
And it gets referenced in our inner circle a lot.
So at the end of our chapter, Voldemort Avada Kedavra's Professor Burbage, and I guess Nagini's going to gobble her up.
Yep.
And that's chapter one. That's where we're at right now.
I think the only thing we didn't hit was Wormtail is there.
Mm-hmm.
And he got sent off to deal with somebody who was making noise.
Down below.
Uh-huh. So there's a prisoner somewhere other than the teacher, the muggle teacher.
Anything else you want to say about chapter one? You want to get to an email?
Email.
All right, this email comes from Mia. She sent it to us, broomsticks.butterbeer@gmail.com. And Mia's in Belleville, Illinois.
Hey, I've been there.
Yeah.
I used to go to the dog show there at the fairgrounds all the time.
Right on the other side of the river. They still got a drive-in there.
Yeah.
A movie drive-in.
We used to do that, too.
She writes, I was talking to a friend recently about how some of Harry's behaviors can be seen as morally gray. I'm wondering, what is, in your opinion, the worst thing Harry ever did in the books or movies? For me, it was Harry using Sectum Sempra on Draco when he really didn't know how much harm it could cause. Anything immediately come to mind when you think of morally ambiguous choices that maybe Harry has made?
That one really is the worst. He decided to use that spell. He had no idea what it would do. It could have killed Draco, but, I mean, it also could have, like, instantly killed Draco, and there would have been no chance to help him or get help or whatever. He literally had no idea what it would do. But also, we know Harry is very impulsive, and he does stuff like that.
But when Harry did that, Draco was about to pull out one of the unforgivable curses.
Yes, but we could have Expelliarmus. There are other things he could have done.
But when, I guess when
he
somebody's...
He chose something that he didn't know what it would
do. When
you
walk into the bathroom and somebody immediately tries to murder you, you know, it's kind of a knee-jerk reaction to defend yourself.
And it was on the front of his mind because he'd been reading about it and whatever, and he's very impulsive. So... That was a bad thing that he did, but it wasn't really intentional. It was just irresponsible.
Yeah, I don't really know if I see Harry's decisions as morally gray. more so that he's made some dumb choices. Mm-hmm. You know, casting a spell that you don't know what it'll do. That's a dumb choice.
There are desperate times coming up, uh-huh. and he does use the unforgivable curses. So that's kind of mine. Like, I don't know. Typically, you think of the hero of the story. He's not going to use
Batman
the unforgivable
kill.
Curses.
Yeah.
You know, he tried to kill Bellatrix.
Yeah.
But he used the spell. He mm-hmm. just couldn't land it. Couldn't make it happen. When he was angry, and then he uses the other two later on, like with intention.
Yeah, tried to use it on Snape too when he was escaping with Draco. I think he tried to use Sectum Sempra, knowing what mm-hmm. it would do, but Snape easily blocked it.
Mm-hmm. So he does make some bad choices when he gets emotional, or he gets kind of reckless. But I feel like in this book, like the further we go, you will see him make a conscious choice. I'm going to use this unforgivable curse to get what we need done to do this. Now, is it like for the greater good kind of thing? Yes, but it's...
But that's exactly what morally gray is, means, yeah. Like, I got to do this for the greater good. It's a bad thing that I'm doing. But that's, you know, so... There, I guess, according to you, there are some level of agreement with Mia on this. Mm-hmm. Mine are more...
more dumb boy?
Mine are more dumb boy. I think stealing Cedric's girl when his body was still warm was a bit sketchy.
It wasn't warm anymore. Also...
Like, the dude wasn't even... That wasn't even 6 feet deep yet.
I feel it's a little weird, though, because they clearly had a thing. They were flirting first.
Harry and Cho.
Yeah. And then the champions had to take somebody to the ball, and Harry didn't ask Cho, and Cedric did. So she went with him. And I don't think she ever really wanted to go with him. I think she wanted to go with Harry.
Well, speaking of the ball.
Yeah.
My other... dumb boy decision was taking Parvati to the Yule Ball, and they haven't had this Yule Ball in like 100 years or something like that, mm-hmm. and then he just ignores her the whole time. just what a jerk. Just ignores her the whole time. She's so excited. She's, you know, we haven't had this ball in 100 years.
She at least
years.
Gets to dance at first, because the champions have to open the mm-hmm. dancing. I feel worse for her sister, who went with Ron, who didn't get to dance at all.
Boys are the worst.
But I also feel like this is typical teenager stuff, too.
Yeah.
I mean, you went to a dance with a girl who didn't really want to be there.
Yeah. Real life.
So I feel like this one triggered you.
It did. I was a little triggered because when I was in high school...
you have Yule Ball trauma.
I do have Yule Ball
school
trauma.
Dance trauma?
I switched high schools halfway through, which I really didn't want to do. I loved my old high school. And so I didn't go to, at my new school, I didn't go to like homecoming or prom or anything like that. I was just bitter my last 2 years of high school. Mm-hmm. But a friend of mine was going to his prom, and he had a friend that needed a date, and we kind of started hanging out, and I thought we were cool. And then... I think she went home with somebody else that night. Like, I don't know what happened to her. She just bailed. And I do have a little, I am a little triggered by Harry's dumb choices.
But I feel like it's just.
Because I have been Parvati Patil before.
But it's a high school thing. It just happens. There was a girl who did that to one of our guy friends. At my high school,
it shouldn't be a thing. Like
it is
shouldn't
a thing.
Be a, like we're just
they
accepting
just
this
go,
as a thing.
And they want to have a date.
You know how high school kids be.
And they got in the door. She, you know, had her corsage. They went and took pictures. Literally 3 seconds after the photos, gone. Didn't speak to him the rest of the night.
Amazing.
And she went to that school. we were not kind to her because she did that to our friend who was from my, like, I went to a private school, so it was K through 8th.
Yeah, can't hide money.
And no, not the case. But so I always try to say, like, elementary school. I feel like that's elementary school, but people call that, I don't know what they call that. Like, I went to middle school?
Junior high, middle school.
What are you at before you go to high school for normal people?
So I went to a junior high, but now they call it middle school.
Okay. So, yeah, but we went to the same school before we went to high school, whatever that you want to call it.
Yeah, I don't know what's happening right now.
I don't know what to call my school. The school before high school. He was like a year younger than us, but he went to our school, and then we went to high school. He was there. So we were very protective of him. It's just root beer.
And gin.
No, just root beer.
It's like, oh, I'll just put a little bit in the can. Nobody will know.
Nobody will know.
And I can talk with my hands a lot.
I do not drink alcohol, sir.
Nothing will slosh out. Well, you're talking like an insane person. I don't know.
It's just because I don't know what that kind of school is called for normal people. Junior high, middle school.
Well, it's a horrible thing to do, whatever age it's done at. And Harry and Ron were both jerks for doing it, and the chick at, I'm not even gonna give her any clout by mentioning her name.
Nope.
But she she Parvati Patil'd me at a dance.
I don't remember the girl's name. I don't think it was Kitty. I think it was the girl who hung out with Kitty.
Kitty, if you're out there.
Kitty, your friend was awful.
Your friend is like...
Your friend from high school.
A horrible person.
Was awful.
She's like, I know. So that's it?
Yeah, I think it is. I had to think about what we were even talking about. I was like,
I don't remember.
Did we finish the chapter?
I don't remember.
Yes. We were talking about an email. Yeah, that's what we were talking about.
I know this is surprising, but I've been dealing with some health issues lately. I know I'm usually the poster boy for good, healthy living, but...
But we're not under a cough warning or anything.
We're not under a cough warning.
And but, it's December. That's kind of rare.
But my tummy hurts, but I'm being really brave about it. It's been hurting for a long time. They were, like, talking about, like, putting me on, like, antipsychotic medicine to... fix it. And I'm like, so I'm crazy? is that what's going
no,
on here?
They're saying they think it's stress induced. Like when you don't want to go to school because you're going to fail your test or you're going to get bullied.
And I never want to go to
school.
And
your tummy hurts because you've been stressing about it.
I mean, there is something about, like, as I get toward the end of my career, there is something about being at work that just kind of gives me the willies. like I don't feel comfortable here. I don't feel safe here. I don't
want to be here.
I don't want to be here.
It's trauma school?
I think I've had too much trauma.
Trauma school?
I just got to suck it up and gut out a couple more years. But hopefully you won't have to suck it up and gut out a couple more years before we finish this book that we just started today. We started Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, and we talked about Chapter 1, and we'll be back with Chapter 2 next time. So thanks, everybody, for downloading, listening, and subscribing. Send us a message if you'd like us to give you a shout-out on the podcast. You can send it broomsticks.butterbeer@gmail.com or send us a message on X at BroomsticksB, at BroomsticksB Podcast on Instagram or on Facebook as well. We're on everything. We're on the dating apps. We're on all those.
Are we?
Yeah. I put us on there.
Oh. is anybody trying to date us?
Just you. There's a lot. I just delete those.
Oh.
But I want them to date both of us.
Yeah. That would make more sense.
Yeah. I don't want to get, left again, like, at prom. So yeah, we're everywhere. We're easy to find. So give us send us a message or ask a question. We'll give you a shout out. And we will continue with the final book, No longer the penultimate book.
Nope.
Now we're on the ultimate book.
The ultimate book.
Book 7, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. Special thanks to our personal inner Voldemort inner circle of Jennifer, Catherine, Amelia, Jane, Ronnie, Anastasia, Kelly, Olivia, Jenny, and baby Emma. So until next time, be a wizard, be a witch, be a muggle, be a squib, but don't be a jerk.
Or a git.
See ya.
Bye.
Gather around, wizards. It's time to explore a world full of magic. We're opening the door with Dan and Jessica. We're here for the ride on broomsticks and butterbeer. Come along for the glide. Chapter by chapter, we're diving so deep through Hogwarts halls where the secrets creep. From the Sorting Hat to the wizarding fights, potions and spells and those magical nights. With our cups full of butterbeer, we analyze the lore, the friendships that blossom, the battles and more. Every word written we take with delight, bringing Harry's world back into the light. Broomsticks and butterbeer, let the magic flow. Join the discussion, there's so much to know. With Dan and Jessica, let your spirit fly. In the wizarding world, we'll always reply. From the Quidditch games to the dark magic's call, we'll take on each chapter, seeing how they enthrall. Hermione's wisdom, Ron's loyal fight, we'll discuss every twist, make the dark turn bright. With an open heart and a curious mind, we'll unlock the secrets that are waiting to find. So grab your broomstick and settle in tight. It's time for the journey we're starting tonight. Broomsticks and butterbeer, let the magic flow. Join the discussion, there's so much to know. With Dan and Jessica, let your spirit fly. In the wizarding world, we'll always reply. Through the pages we wander side by side. In every adventure, we take it in stride. The laughter and lessons, the love and the pain. With each chapter shared, we'll never be the same. Let's raise our glasses to the stories we share. In the world of Potter, there's magic everywhere. From Diagon Alley to the Forbidden Forest, exploring this universe, we're never the worst. Every twist and turn, oh, it makes us feel the power of friendship, that's the real deal. So don't miss a moment, let's savor the fun. With broomsticks and butterbeer, the magic's just begun. So here's to the chapters, both old and new. With every spell cast, a world that feels true. On broomsticks and butterbeer, we'll see you next time. With laughter and magic, we're forever.